inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining us today. Got a lot of great guests for you today. This is going to be a power-packed program. You're going to love it. We're going to start with Colonel Alan West. Just had him on the Wall Builders program and in The Tavern, which is the show you can catch me on with Warrior Poet Society Network, John Lovell's network over there. Great guys. Fantastic channel, by the way. You got to check it out. And then you can also see it on Patriot U. That's PatriotU.com, which is the streaming service of Patriot Academy, where you can get all our Constitution classes, all kinds of great programming there as well. But The Tavern is my chance to have some, you know, candid conversations with some folks out there about the strategies and tactics necessary to save our country, to restore liberty. That's the kind of stuff that happened in the taverns of the Revolutionary period and the parlors and churches. They sat around and talked about these things and they planned. And so I love doing that. And Colonel Alan West joined me just a couple of days ago to talk about what's happening in Washington, D.C., specifically as the colonel, telling us about the firing of the generals and the importance of President Trump cleaning out all the woke generals. So I believe you're really going to enjoy this. Let's jump right in with Alan West joining me in The Tavern. Colonel Alan West, the man, the myth, the legend with us. Hey, good to see you, man. How you been?
I'm doing well. No complaints whatsoever. It's hard to believe that February is over and we're into March already.
I think we're both just, you know, it's just win after win after win after win. So the time's flying by because we're just trying to keep up with all the good stuff that's happening. Man, you and I have been dreaming of some of the things that are happening right now for many years. And you're an optimist like I am, but I gotta tell you, brother, I didn't know, I deep down I doubted whether we'd get a lot of the victories that we're getting right now. So it is pretty remarkable what's happening.
It is, and it's a great thing to see constitutional governance being restored. And I think that's why the progressive socialists are in such an apoplectic meltdown, and all the things that are being revealed about the fraud, waste, and abuse. I mean, we have known that, but now it's right here before us, and you can't justify it. You can't. I don't understand why people are upset about it, other than the fact that they're embarrassed, because with the system of checks and balances, Congress should have been conducting oversight over all of this, and they weren't.
Oh, that's a great point. I hadn't even thought, you know, to ask you about that. As a former member of Congress, you know, these guys, you know, you when you're trying to get them to look into all these things, and they're always like, oh, don't worry, that's okay, they got this taken care of, or it's all happening behind the scenes. You know, right now, those guys that have been there for 40 years, you know, they knew a lot of this stuff had to be going on, or like you said, totally dereliction of duty, didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Well, it's all the above. It's incompetence, it's dereliction of duty. Think about, you know, I sat on the House Armed Services Committee. The Pentagon has not passed an audit in 7 years. I mean, what gives? I mean, when these people come to testify before you, you know, why isn't someone looking at that? Or when the Secretary of State, Tony Blinken or whoever comes up, why are we asking about USAID? Why is it the director of USAID standing before Congress and testifying? And why aren't we asking the questions about, let's go line by line with the appropriations and let's figure out where that money is going?
I think everybody was shocked at how much money almost was off the books. Maybe it was on the books for somebody somewhere, but the amount of money that was getting thrown around by them. And then, of course, now we're seeing all the other, you know, fraud and abuse. It's so great to have the transparency, finally have a president that's willing to talk about these things in public. I bet you enjoyed the Zelensky smackdown, too. I had fun with that. I was thinking, yes, slap him around a little bit more, man. He's been needing this for a long time, that little, I call him a tyrant poser. He's just, it's just embarrassing. But, man, they let him have it.
You know, he deserved it. And, you know, him walking around like he's a real tough guy dressed up as a, you know, toy soldier. I mean, give me a break. I mean, it wasn't too long ago he was in skin tight leather with high heels doing a dance, the Beyonce music. So he really deserved that. And that smackdown was on behalf of all the American taxpayers who have said, we have given you hundreds of billions of dollars while our border was wide open and while we have lost 250,000 Americans over the last 4 years to this thing called fentanyl. So how dare you, you know, disrespect and disregard us?
And to do it in a way where, you know, this almost, completely, I don't care if he said the words thank you to senators at some times and that sort of thing, is an ungrateful attitude. And he always would come around with an expectation, you need to give me more, you have to give me more almost. So, yeah, it's a new day for sure. You know, you had this great article. By the way, how can people sign up for your regular newsletter? I love reading your constitutional take on so many things. What's the best way to get on your list?
Well, go to theacru.org, and that's where you can get the weekly Colonel's Constitutional Brief. And then also, if you go to dallasgop.org, I put out the Monday message there for the from the Dallas GOP as the chairman of that organization.
By the way, thank you for investing in the city of Dallas to turn that around, taking over the Republican Party there as chair, and just, you know, not giving up on Dallas. We need Dallas. But your article that that we were talking about recently is this whole firing of the generals, the weeping and gnashing of teeth, and everybody acting like this is some unusual thing that Donald Trump's doing. But I mean, administrator, you mentioned it in your article. I mean, Obama fired how many generals? And I mean, doesn't the president have the prerogative?
193 in 5 years.
Wow.
And everyone's upset about Donald Trump and 6-3 and 4-star generals. Like, this is a grand national security threat. You know, the military can get along without some 3- and 4-star generals. And if you go back to Abraham Lincoln, I mean, he was firing generals left and right until he got to the right generals like a Ulysses Sam Grant and others who would go on the offense and stay on the offense against the Confederacy. But, you know, folks got to understand that generals serve at the behest of the commander-in-chief. And when you read the Constitution in Article 2, there's only one title that the Constitution grants upon the president, and that's commander-in-chief, nothing else. It says that executive power is vested in the president, but specifically it refers to him as a commander-in-chief. So, you know, these generals have to understand they're not entitled to anything, and if they have gone along with ideologies and beliefs that are antithetical to protecting and supporting and defending our Constitution, which is what they took an oath to do, then they can be relieved of command. But I think, Rick, the most important thing that a lot of people don't understand and don't recognize is that after your promotion to Brigadier General or Rear Admiral, the 1-star level, the 2-star, 3-star, 4-stars, those are all political appointments. And we have to be very circumspect and look at under what type of administration do some of these people rise in? Because what they end up doing is becoming political ideologues and not becoming true generals. And so General Charles Q. Brown, I mean, he was a guy that got involved in the whole George Floyd social justice thing. That's not his place as a senior level commander in the military. And then, of course, he is the guy who infamously said that he only wanted 43% of white pilots in the Air Force.
Wow.
Where you come up with that number? And first and foremost, Rick, I'm on the ground. I'm hooking and jabbing with the bad guys. If I tell someone, get on the phone and call in close air support, do you think I'm going to say and ask if they're a white pilot? Can you tell me if they're, you know, what? No, I just care that this pilot is going to put the bombs or do the strafe and run that I need to keep my troops safe on the ground. So that's why General Charles Q. Brown is gone. I mean, he signed up for all this gender bender stuff and all these personal pronoun stuff while we saw the readiness of our military collapse.
Well, and that has to, you know, I know all the reinstating people that got drummed out for the jab or, you know, so many other things that Trump and Hegseth are doing it's obviously we've already seen the recruiting rates go through the roof as a result of that. Having a commander in chief you can be proud of, bringing patriotism back, all those things have to be helping with the readiness. You're talking to tons of these guys on the ground. I would think even this, the willingness to fire the woke generals and get people back in there, as Hegseth said, you know, that have the warrior ethos and that recognize what the military is supposed to be for, that's probably helping as well. Not only the morale of the ones that are currently in, but a kid that's thinking about going in. You know, when they come to you and say, hey, Colonel, should I sign up? I want to serve, but I don't want to serve in a woke military and I don't want to, you know, now it's a lot easier to say, man, you got a great opportunity to serve at this point.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I cannot tell you how many parents have come to me and said, you know, my son or my daughter really wants to go into the military. You know, do you think that now is the right time? And I would tell him no, because when you have someone that would check his watch during a ramp ceremony for 13 brave warriors coming home that lost their lives because of the debacle that they created at the strategic level, no one wants to join a military like that. And then, of course, no one is held responsible, accountable, or you see $80 to $85 billion of our equipment left there to support a terrorist organization like the Taliban, or you see the senior leadership of the Taliban returning back to Afghanistan to be in the position that our brave warriors took them off the battlefield and put them in Guantanamo Bay. No one wants to serve in that type of military. But now they want to serve in a military where they know they will be respected, when they know that they will get the opportunity to go in and do what Colin Powell said. The purpose of a military is to go in, kill people, and break stuff. And that's what they're going to get the opportunity to do. And if they get deployed, they're going to understand their task and purpose. It's not going to be some open-end deployment. And look what President Trump has done. I mean, he's going in saying there are many other ways that we can resolve these conflicts before we, you know, commit any United States military troops, our blood and treasure. And also, let's understand, when the president says, I'm going to put U.S. troops on our border, we send our troops to borders all over the world to protect other people. Why can't we protect ourselves with our United States military? And that's not a violation of posse comitatus, because you're talking about non-state, non-uniform belligerents coming across our border. You're not talking about American citizens. You're talking about people that are trying to infiltrate, invade our country, which is clearly articulated in Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution in the Guarantee Clause. The federal government is supposed to protect every state from invasion. So, yes, these young men and women now want to join the military where they get to be soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, Coast Guardsmen, and also Guardians, the Space Force cadets.
Man. Preach it, brother. Okay, well, you mentioned the border, so let's go there for just a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been one of the most vocal advocates for sealing our border, securing our border, trying to get our governor to do it here in Texas. But just, you know, now that you've got a president that's actually going to do it, what do you think about the cartels being named as terrorist organizations, and just tactically what can be done now by the president and our military, not only to defend the border, but to potentially go in and clean up some of that on the other side of the border when necessary?
Well, I'll just put it this way. We tolerate Al-Qaeda being right across our border and, you know, seeking to have operational control. Would we tolerate the Taliban or
right.
Hamas or Hezbollah? No. And so these cartels, let's stop calling them cartels. They are a transnational narco-criminal terrorist organization. And because of them, 250,000 Americans lost their lives in the past 4 years. So when you designate them as a terrorist organization, you can use all elements of national power. You can use the diplomatic element, the informational, the economic element, but also you have that military element. And I think the important thing for President Trump to say, and he's trying to do it through this tariff situation, is to tell the president of Mexico, you fix this, or else we will come across this border and fix it. Because obviously, for whatever reason, you cannot control this terrorist organization that has come across our border. You cannot control this terrorist organization that is engaging across the border in firefights with our Border Patrol agents. And we know that to be the case. So, yes, I think that there is going to come a time when we have the technology, we have the means by which to do it, we can reduce the collateral damage, but we cannot continue to allow this free flow of weaponry and drugs and things of this nature and terrorists to come across the border. But, Rick, think about what just happened, I think, about 72 hours ago in Brownsville, Texas. A Texan, a citizen of the United States of America, was killed because of an IED on his property.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that these people do not regard our sovereignty, and they do not regard the lives of American citizens. If they're planting IEDs, improvised explosive devices, in the United States of America, in an American city. So this is not a law enforcement operation. This is a military operation. We need to see it as such.
You know, the, 29, how did you say it now? I'm going to stop using cartel. Transnational
narco-criminal terrorists.
Transnational narco-criminal terrorist.
But just call them, it's a terrorist organization. And if you want to put it in the right terms of the rule of law, they are non-state, non-uniform belligerents. They have no rights.
There you go.
Just the same as Hamas says, they have no rights. You find them, you kill them. Or, you know, if they capitulate, then you send them to Guantanamo Bay, but just get them off the battlefield.
Yeah. I wonder what they're going to do with the, 29 that they flew in recently. And apparently that's because of the pressure that Trump has put on the Mexican government. Right. So they've been willing now to turn those 29 over anyway. You could probably tell me, I don't know if you want to tell me off the record or on the show here. But I've always thought those terrorists that are right across the border, they should be practiced for our special forces. Like, that ought to be training. Hey guys, we're going to do a training exercise, but it's for real. We're going to go take out some of these guys, and this will be your first mission, but it's not too far away. So let's head over. I mean, seems like that's a no-brainer.
No, you're absolutely right. We have had an organization called JTF-6 that has been operating on the border quite some time. It's a mix of our reserve component, also active duty component, but mostly it's been intelligence gathering, what have you. But I think it's about time that we have to start looking at kinetic instead of non-kinetic solutions, because that's the only memo that it seems that these terrorists across the border seem to understand.
That's Colonel Alan West. Got a quick interruption here. We'll be right back. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core. Thanks for staying with us. Alan West, our special guest today. Well, our first guest today, anyway. We're going to jump right back into that interview with Colonel Alan West, where he joined me in the tavern.
And again, when you just brought up this 29, see, this is how I think. Is this a 29 that they said, here, we'll give them to you, President of Mexico. You send them to America to make it seem like, you know, you're working with us. But the bottom line is that we're going to protect the real folks that we want. And we saw that happen so much in Afghanistan when, you know, all of a sudden we get this leader, but it was a leader that fell out of favor with the Taliban. And they wanted
him. So they were
just
sacrificed to appease us.
They would sacrifice that guy. So, yeah. So I'm just wondering if these 29, all of a sudden, it popped up on the radar screen.
Right.
You know, if they have been sacrificed, but the real hard hitters, they're still out there operating.
Yep. Yep. I bet you're right. Hey, before I let you go, you mentioned you used the word vested powers earlier. I don't know if you saw that in that executive order, I don't know, a week or two ago. I had missed the I can't believe I missed it. It went until a week later that I read through it. And it's got this great line in it where he's requiring, you know, a DOGE person at each agency, and they have to analyze every regulation. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they have to look at is whether or not it goes beyond the power vested in the federal government through the Constitution. I don't know if you saw that or not, but man, I knew you would love that. And you've probably already seen it and gone to town on it.
No, I hadn't seen it.
Just think about that. Every agency actually looking at all of those regulations, and he only gave them 60 days. You got to report back on any regulations. So, you know, guys like you and me, we've been saying forever, you only got these few things you're supposed to be
18.
Doing through the Constitution. Yeah, and that's
18.
It. And nothing else. And so all these other things they're doing are outside of those powers. I mean, that to me is exciting. Obviously, that doesn't get rid of it, but it makes them start thinking through that lens. And then you have a list that, you know, Congress can go after and start striking out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Article 1, Section 8, you know this very well. 18. Enumerated duties, responsibilities, purviews, jurisdictions of the federal government. Everything else is not their business. That's why you have the 10th Amendment. All of those powers that are not specifically designated to the federal government reserved to the states and to the people. And I would like to see us take this to the next level where anything that is brought up in the House or the Senate, they need to be able to quote specifically how that relates back to the Constitution. Because, again, we're getting way outside the borders and bounds of purviews. Look, Department of Education, a lot of people think or act like the Department of Education has been around forever. That was Jimmy Carter. Those are the teachers' unions coming and saying, we want to have our own department. Forget this health, education, and welfare thing, HEW. Let's make the Department of Education. Let's make HUD. Let's make Health and Human Services. So it's time that we start looking at how this government bureaucracy, this deep administrative state, has expanded and grown since Lyndon Johnson. And let's start peeling it back and getting it back into the constitutional box that our framers intended it to be.
All right, folks, you got to get on Alan's list. I'm telling you, the emails are fantastic. It's constitutional education every week or sometimes multiple times a week with all kinds of great information there. Colonel West, God bless you, brother. Thank you so much for coming on.
God be with you. Take care, Rick.
That was Colonel Alan West. Great to have him on the program. And such good news, just all the way around, so many good things happening. This next interview, same thing. Congressman Roger Williams, he's been a congressman for a few years now out of Texas, been working on a lot of these things that you see DOGE doing now, that you see on the business side of things. He's a very successful businessman and was a baseball player as well. And you know, Congressman Williams has been a great friend to Wall Builders, to Patriot Academy. And I think we're going to enjoy chatting with him about what's been happening and really just the optimism going forward with what they can get done in Congress now. A lot of things he's been working on for years that they couldn't get passed that we now have the opportunity to do. Congressman Roger Williams with us now on the American Family Association's At the Core radio program with Walker Waldman and Rick Green.
Good to see you, Rick. Always glad to be with you.
Well, y'all are in the thick of it. How's it feel to have a White House actually supporting the things that you're doing instead of trying to kill everything that you're doing?
Well, they're not trying to kill anything. Plus, they're thinking of new ideas, too. We haven't had that in a while. But let me tell you, as you know, President Trump's doing everything he said he would. He ran on everything he's doing. 75 million people agree with him. So I think it's great. And I think we saved our country November 5th, don't you?
Amen, brother.
We really did. And people spoke out. They want less government. They want lower taxes. They want an energy policy. They want peace. and all that Trump's given to us in 2 weeks.
It's hard to imagine how fast things have changed. For you as a member of Congress right now, knowing that things are moving so fast, how do you decide what you want to put your, you know, focus on? I mean, this is a target rich environment to save the country, as you said. So what are you choosing as the main things to work on?
Well, what we've always chosen, you know, I chair the Small Business Committee and I'm on the Financial Services Committee. But I've always been focused on tax cuts, been focused on less regulations. Regulations, for example, are killing Main Street America. I mean, you guys see it in your business, and we need to reduce regulations. We need an energy policy. We need a strong border. I mean, all the things we talk about, but we're able to get a lot of this done by the Small Business Committee. We're getting a lot of pro-business legislation up to where we get it voted on. Regulations are getting cut. Banking business, I just got a bill out, 1071, that reduces regulations to community banks and basically saves community banks from being out of business. We need an energy policy. We're all going to be for Keystone Pipeline and drill, baby, drill, as the president said. And look what he's done at the border. I mean, the border's been phenomenal, right? I saw today 200 processes, the lowest it's ever been. And he's taken from the highest to the lowest. We told America, the world, that America wants you, but you got to come the right way, not the long way.
Right. Well, speaking of the regulations, yeah, I was surprised at how many of the executive orders and even just some of the things President Trump said with regard to how much regulation increases the cost of things and how people, you know, if they had to choose between a tax cut or regulation, which thankfully they're not having to choose, we're going to do both, they would go with get rid of the regulation because it's that ongoing just albatross around our necks, right? That keeps us from being able to start that new business or expand that business. And you got to go through all these hoops and paperwork. I think I read 30% of the cost of a house now is all these government regulations. So that seems like, you know, a real focus for the president as well. Like you said, you've been working on this for years and already lay a lot of that groundwork. So we're able to take that ground back very quickly, it seems like.
Well, one of the interesting things, and you've probably seen it, but under Biden's in his time as president, he added $1.73 trillion worth of regulations on Main Street America. Unbelievable, isn't it? And to fight those $1.73 trillion dollars, it takes 220 million man hours to offset all that in a time that's hard to hire people. And and those man hours can be converted not from a compliance director, but say to a loan officer in a bank or a car salesman in my industry or somebody in your industry might be able to go and sell advertisers, sell the show, but you had to comply. And that's a hindrance, and we're fixing that, and it's a big deal. And you're right, a lot of people would rather have less regulations. Here's the thing, we're so tired of competing with the government, aren't we? I want to compete against you. I want to compete against my competitor. I don't want to compete against the federal government because you never win that way. And that's what we had with Biden. He was choking everybody to death and sent us down a path that only he was a survivor.
Yeah, and even if it's the government putting the thumb on the scale where they're helping a particular person instead of somebody else or a particular business. Back to the border, Congressman, you know, you again had been working on all of this. That had to be so frustrating to see, you know, have your own government opening that border and allowing all that, and you're there in the government trying to stop it. And the president and Mayorkas and the rest doing what they did, how quickly that spigot has been turned off and how quickly that policy has changed. Do you think people are already feeling that in the safety in the streets and that sort of thing? I mean, we're only barely a month in, but it's already having an impact.
No, it is. People are positive. I don't know if they're seeing it in the streets yet, but look, common sense tells you if you're getting the bad guy and taking him off the street's going to be safer. And we're following the bad guys, and that's what we're doing. We're taking the Gitmo, and we're taking where we need to be. But, you know, it's just a situation where we're back to being America again. You know, woke is broke. Now you can talk like you want to talk. You can be who you all want to be. You can say, I voted for Trump. I mean, we're back to being America, and it didn't take that long. It didn't take long to destroy it. It didn't take long to bring it back. And now, of course, we're setting up ourselves on the world stage to remind the world that without a strong America, spiritually, economically, socially, and militarily, the world would implode. We're getting back to being number one because our enemies do fear us now. I mean, look at, you take Russia. I mean, Putin doesn't, he's not comfortable with Trump being president. Venezuela's not either, you name it. So we're getting back quickly on where we need to be. And I think America feels it and the people are excited about it.
leadership matters, man, and it does have such an impact so quickly. Last thing, just in terms of legislation coming up, the tight majority, the slim majority. I know everybody asks you about this, but for our listeners, y'all are still getting things done. So even with that slim majority, we've seen some really good bills get through. So how are y'all pulling that off? I mean, that's hard to hold the whole caucus together. And actually, y'all have had some Democrats with you on some of these bills as well. But it's just surprising. I guess, what are your thoughts on that? How y'all have been able to get things through even with that tight majority?
It's been pretty phenomenal. It's the lowest majority ever. But we have common sense bills, right? We have common sense bills that empower the people, not the government. It says, hey, we're going to have less government, not more government. And it's power to the people, if you want to say that. So we've been doing that. And of course, we just passed a budget out of the committee. Now it's got to go to the floor so we can pass a budget so the president can do really what he needs to be doing. And the debate is whether we're going to put border ahead of taxes or taxes ahead of border. We'll get that done next week and get some legislation passed and get going. I'd like to see tax cuts and border done by the end of March. Let's see what happens.
That'd be fantastic. And like you said, I mean, it's literally power to the people. All these issues, 60, 65% issues, and the Biden administration was going against what the American people wanted. So everybody's so relieved and so excited as y'all pass these things. It just feels like such a fast turnaround. So good. I hope that it causes people to start taking the risks that they were afraid to take before. Start that business. Go out and expand. Go do all of those things that American ingenuity and spirit used to be, but just seemed to be dampened in such a big way for the last 4 years.
Just but piggyback on what you said, is that part of the thing about regulations is reducing regulation to community banks that in the past had so many regulations, it was easier not to make the loan than to make the loan. Now regulations are being reduced. Now they can go out and make a loan. Now they can go hire a loan officer instead of a compliance officer. Now you're back in business. You can take risk and get reward, a thing called America.
Hey, the ripple effects are huge on exactly what you just talked about. Congressman, thank you so much, man. Appreciate you. God bless you. We look forward to getting you back soon.
God bless you.
That was Congressman Roger Williams from Texas. Always good to have him on the program. And I think one of the things I'm hoping that you get a sense of when I share these interviews with you is there's a lot of people out there you may not be familiar with that are fighting the good fight and that are gaining ground, that are winning some battles. And a lot of times we get cynical. We think everybody in politics is crooked, that there's nobody that has backbone and courage and standing for truth. And so the more we have these folks on, whether they're a state legislator or in Congress or, Colonel West being a former congressman and now county chair of Dallas County, and, all these people that are on the front lines, it's just a great reminder for all of us to know that God's got an army out there, man. He's got a lot of people that have engaged in the fight and that are doing good work and winning a lot of battles. And just because we now have a president that is pushing the right things and putting the right people in place is not enough. We have to know that, there had to be a team that was raised up for him to do the things he's doing right now. All these years, all these decades of training young people, of training pastors, of training candidates, of training people to get involved in the process. And I'm talking about everybody from Wall Builders and Patriot Academy to American Family Association, Leadership Institute, all American Majority. I mean, all these groups have been working really hard to be ready for this moment and have the people out there that God had raised up and put in a position to be able to now go into these agencies and into Congress and into these various areas to secure the victories. If we hadn't done that, then it would be, right now you'd have a president, but he would be, well, frankly, what happened in the first term? He would be getting undermined by the people that he were on his staff or running those agencies. He didn't have the team 8 years ago that he has right now. So I just think that the work that's been done behind the scenes, however you want to describe it, I mean, just all of the tilling of the ground, planting the seeds, watering the seeds, we're seeing the fruit of that now. And I stress that with you because that may be happening in your life. You may be in a season of planting right now where you're not getting to see the harvest. And you might be wondering, why am I doing what I'm doing? But God's planted you somewhere where you're able to till that ground. You're able to sow into other people that, whoever he's put in your life. Maybe you're a pastor out there that's frustrated because You don't feel like your church is having the impact on the community that you wanted. But if you're raising patriots in your church, if you're making disciples, if you're actually training them to obey everything that Jesus commanded, if you're teaching them the whole counsel of God, the whole gospel, and not just part of it, if you're actually talking about whatever's going on in the world and then talking about what the Bible says about it, I can promise you there will be fruit that comes from that. It may not be in this particular season of harvesting that's happening at the federal level. It may be 5 years from now, something that happens in your community or in your state. I think that's one of the things that we have to get better at is to think generationally, to not be a microwave culture, to not be so immediate gratification that we want to place our order at the window and drive through in 60 seconds and get our food and move on. This is not one of those areas that works. This is an area where you've got to bake this in for years before you see the fruit. The fruit that we're seeing right now in Washington, D.C. and these executive orders and the things that Donald Trump is doing and the agencies and the leadership that's there and that's joining this team, that is coming after decades of seeds being sown. I'm talking about back to Jerry Falwell and the Moral Majority. I'm talking about back to Don Wildman and the beginning of American Family Association. I'm talking about back to Pat Robertson and the Christian Coalition. And I'm talking about things that happened in the 80s and the 90s. And then there was a new generation that came along in the 2000s that started, you know, taking those seeds and truly watering them and making it where that you could build on what had been planted by the previous generation. It's no different than the Pilgrims and how many generations it took to get to the real fruit. It's no different than the Founding Fathers and the fact that they fought the Revolutionary War, but it was another generation before, almost a generation, before you actually had the Bill of Rights and you had the first president. And I mean, that took 20 years. Think about it, from the Boston Massacre all the way to the Bill of Rights being in the Constitution is two full decades. So we need to be thinking about that. We need to be enjoying this harvest we've got right now. But what are the seeds you're planting right now for the next harvest? What are you doing to sow in, to pass the torch of freedom to the next generation? Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
We're back on At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me today. We got one more interview for you today, and it's actually going to pick up on what I was talking about right before the break. You know, it's essentially we're in this moment where we're seeing all these victories in Washington, D.C., and we're seeing the things that President Trump's doing. But I don't want to say it's surface level because these are huge, huge things. They're things that we've prayed for, trained for, hoped for. I mean, this is fantastic. But it is somewhat surface level from the standpoint that it gives us air cover to do the hard work back home. Also at the federal level, it's the beginning, but man, we've got to root out the rot that's in the culture big time in Washington, D.C. So I'm just saying there's a lot of work to do. And Jerry Newcomb, we're gonna talk about this, just the importance of digging deep and winning this, of actually turning this, what Roger Williams was talking about earlier, really turning this thing around and getting our fiscal house in order. Jerry Newcomb from Providence Forum, thanks for coming on, brother. Actually, by the way, thank you for doing this from NRB. You're at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and I know things are busy and crazy there, so thanks for being willing to do that.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, great article on USAID. You know, everybody's talking about it and the waste, and we all get disgusted, but you brought it back around in your article to kind of looking at it from the founder's view and how disgusting this would have been to them. That literally violates everything they stood for.
It really does. I mean, the founders wrote specifically about, you know, don't carry public debt. Okay, if you're going to have a situation where there's a war or something like that, you know, maybe the government has to borrow. But during peacetime, we should not be living, you know, beyond our means as a government. And of course, we've seen with the unbelievable waste, fraud, and abuse of the federal government that's been exposed just in the last couple of weeks, it's just mind-numbing. dummy. Honestly, Rick, to process the information that they keep coming out with is almost like trying to drink water from a fire hydrant. I know that's a cliche, but it's true. It's like, how do you keep up with all this stuff?
I couldn't agree with you more, man. It's like every day, multiple times a day. That's the thing. Like, if it was one big headline a day, Jerry, I think we could maybe keep up because you'd have some time to, but it's not. It's three or four times a day. There's something big getting uncovered. And, it also makes me thankful that there's a good team being assembled by the Trump administration to send into each of these agencies and clean this stuff out. And they're not taking just little, chisels at it, man. They're taking a sledgehammer at it. I feel like Sam Adams has taken over. I think this is how he would have done it. Anyway.
Samuel Adams. Samuel, you know what? Lately, I've been studying a lot more, and Peter Loback and I are working on a book about Samuel Adams and the Sons of Liberty and the Liberty Trees. Samuel Adams deserves much more credit than he gets in modern America. And I'm not talking anything about beers. I'm talking about, what he contributed to. In fact, one author put it this way. The Declaration of Independence was the culmination of Samuel Adams' life work. And I just thought that's tremendous. And of course, the Declaration of Independence says our rights come from God. As you well know, and as your ministry proclaims that all the time. And think about this, Rick, in that article about this fraud, waste, and abuse and how this is so contrary to the founding fathers. One of the items listed is that the State Department spent something like $400,000 to promote atheism in Nepal. Now, wait a minute. America is, to this day, our motto is "In God We Trust," right? That's our motto. It's even on our money. And yet, money was wasted to promote atheism in some of these other countries. That just doesn't make sense. I don't even see, I can't even compute some of the waste, fraud, and abuse that's been reported. And I know the founders would not agree with this.
Yeah, and in fact, Jerry, I was just Sunday. My pastor, in his sermon, was sharing the 1607, covenant that talks about proclaiming at Jamestown for proclaiming the gospel, but it had a line in it about and future generations to spread the gospel to the world. So it was like even 400 years ago, the idea that we would be exporting from this continent,
good stuff,
the good values, and instead this administration and frankly it's been other administrations too, because it's been part of the deep state that nobody even knew was going on. We've been exporting evil instead of exporting good.
I know. It's amazing. And it even reaches absurd levels. And when you start talking about this with some people that, let's say, are more of a, of the people of the left, if you will, they basically deny the story. So in other words, they're blaming the messenger, not the message. And so, if you asked, okay, are you in favor of thousands of dollars being spent for transgender comic books in Peru? Well, whatever, but they're not really doing that. Well, they are. I mean, I have, that one senator from Louisiana, John Kennedy, who speaks with a Southern drawl, and he's quite humorous, but he's made that point multiple times that if you listen to the criticisms against the revelation of this waste, fraud, and abuse, they're not, saying they're not coming to grips with the waste, fraud, and abuse that's being exposed. Instead, they're blaming the messenger. Oh, Elon Musk is bad, and the whiz kids are bad, and Trump is bad.
Yeah, and Jerry, you were, you talk in the article, you quote Jefferson talking about how bad it is to saddle our nation with this debt, and it's stealing from the next generation. When we pass it on to them, we're basically taking from not just their inheritance, we're taking from their future earnings.
Yeah, we're stealing from them. We're stealing from my children, your children, our grandchildren. It's just awful. And, basically all the founding fathers, talked about if the country has to go into debt, if it's necessary, such as in war, then as soon as it's all over and you have peace, then stop the debt. And instead, the government has just been borrowing. It's outrageous. Outrageous how much they borrowed. $36 trillion is the amount that we're in debt. So it just boggles the mind when you get down to it.
You know, Jerry, we've been doing this about the same amount of time, several decades. And I don't know about you, but I've never seen the same appetite that we have now in the people, in the American people, to want to see this cleaned up. You know, usually everybody's protecting their own little fiefdoms or the program they like, or they buy the story that this is government saving us and keeping us healthy and all the, you know, all those things. Right now it's different. It seems like to me, people are going, oh yeah, that's ridiculous. That money shouldn't be. Yeah, slash and burn. I mean, all the polling numbers show they love what Doge is doing and Elon and President Trump. Is that your sense as well?
Well, yes, although obviously there's a very vocal minority that is objecting to it. And I'll tell you what, Rick, if I could, there's an item that I put in my book, In the Footsteps of Giants, in the chapter about debt. And it relates to this whole subject of, you know, Doge and exposing all this waste. But this is the purpose of this is to let me put $1 trillion in perspective. And again, remember, we're $36 trillion in debt. This is from a scholar. He said, if I owed you $100 and said I'd pay you in 1 million seconds, then I would pay you in 12 days. If I owed you $100 and said I will pay you in 1 billion seconds with a B, then I would pay you in 32 years. But if I owed you $100 and said I'll pay you in 1 trillion seconds, when would I pay you? In 32,000 years.
Whoa.
It's like, what? This just boggles the mind. And this is the kind of debt we're saddling our future generations to. I appreciate the administration saying no more. We've got to stop this. Got to cut the bleeding and then, you know, lop off these different debts. And, you know, even right now, we're at the point where a lot of the debt that's being accumulated is to help pay off the interest on the debt. So
that's right.
It's just crazy, Rick. And I know the founders would not have approved of this at all. That government, which governs the least, governs the best, was a that's general right. philosophy they held to.
That's right. And last thing, Jerry, I know you got to run there at NRV, but the it's no different than for us personally, right? If we're in debt, we're limited in our decisions and the things we can do and the things we can do to help other people. It's the same for our country. When we have this much debt, we're limited in our decisions and our ability to do the things that we should be doing as a government. Does that make sense? I mean, it's like the more debt we compile, absolutely, the harder it is to have a good government.
That is so true. And, you know, in fact, I think of Benjamin Franklin, one of our founding fathers, and some of the things he wrote in, you know, Poor Richard's Almanac and so forth about, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned. Of course, it costs 3 pennies to make 1 penny. No, forget that part. But anyway, you know, he would often talk about how, you know, if you want to, you know, succeed, make sure you spend less than you make. So, or, you know, if you overspend what you make, then eventually it's just all going to collapse and so forth. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that where people are having, you know, just runaway debt on a personal level, and it's really terrible. And, you know, and I know situations where people get caught up in this thing with the credit cards, and they're just overwhelmed. It's almost like they're drowning in debt. And you're right, it takes away options. And so as a nation, for us to go down this road, we've got to correct. And I think this is a very welcome time from this administration to start, you know, trying to correct these things. You know, God's word, in fact, is filled with examples where I'm thinking right now of the parable of the talents, where Jesus says, hey, you know, I'm going to hold you accountable one day, and I don't want you to waste the money. I want you to take the resources I give you and the talents and so forth and use them, you know, for God's glory and others' good.
Amen. Amen. Well, and it used to be that there was just a voice here or a voice there in the House or the Senate or a governor or whoever that would sound the alarm and say the things you and I are saying right now. And now it just feels like there's a chorus. There's so many more that are in the positions to actually do something about it. So it just gives me so much hope that they're making these big dramatic steps. I mean, obviously the devil's in the detail and we'll see how much they actually get done. But it feels pretty good right now, Jerry.
It does. May God help us to keep going until this thing is really, you know, under control. Because right now it is not under control, but we're seeing steps, major steps are being taken in the right direction.
That was Jerry Newcomb. Had a chance to interview him while he was at National Religious Broadcasters, and we played that on Wallbuilder. Some of you might have heard that over the weekend on the Wallbuilder show. But anyway, I love the fact that we're uncovering things that had been in the dark for so long. I mean, so much of this waste, and we knew there was corruption. We knew there was waste. We knew that, but we just couldn't put our finger on it too often. You couldn't see it. You couldn't, you know, you'd hear the reports from Rand Paul and others, and they'd point out some of the wasteful spending, some of the absurd things we were doing. But we knew there was more. We knew it was worse than even what we were hearing. And when even the congressmen don't know about so much of these things, it's such an embarrassment that it happened. But man, what a glorious day now that we are uncovering it, that we're finding these things out, and that the American people are responding to this. That cannot be overemphasized right now. There was not an appetite for this kind of corruption being exposed and gotten rid of just a few years ago. I mean, you could try talking about this stuff and people would be like, I don't care. You know, it's not affecting my backyard. They couldn't make the connection that it was, in fact, causing all kinds of problems for them, or that it was taking that much more of their paycheck or whatever. They just didn't care. They didn't want to be bothered with it. Maybe in some ways we didn't want to admit that it was so bad, or we didn't want to have to deal with it. One of those kind of things that you just sweep under the rug. But they would often too. I mean, a lot of people, they just didn't want to. They didn't want to address it because it also would mean that their gravy train might be affected. And what I mean by that is that almost everybody you know has some sort of program or something that they benefit from tax dollars. They benefit from being able to have some program that either is something in their community that they care about and they get federal funding for it or whatever. I mean, just to so many people are on the receiving end that there was almost this, I don't know, scratch my back, I'll scratch your back kind of thing, where I won't uncover yours. I won't, you know, object to the money that's being spent on your pet project if you don't object. That has led to this out of control $36-37 trillion in debt, and there's just a different attitude now. I mean, people are actually, they have an appetite for change. There's a level of disgust that is just, it should have never happened in the first place. And then there's just a sense of, we're going to get to the bottom of this and we're going to turn this thing around. And I got to admit, I think God's using some unlikely characters like Elon Musk. I mean, here's a guy that's not even a Christian yet. I believe he's on his way, man. I mean, this is a guy that calls himself a cultural Christian, but he's got a sense of justice on this thing. He actually, I believe, is part of the reason, a huge part of the reason that everybody else has the backbone to move forward here and make these big changes. He's just driving this in a lot of ways. And then, of course, as we've talked about here on the program, Donald Trump has just been radicalized to the Constitution and to saving America, and all of the things that they did to him has caused him to have a resolve that's necessary to do these kind of things. So it's a great day in America, a great time, and we're going to keep bringing you interviews and keep bringing you people that are on the front lines that are fighting these fights. But at the same time, we're going to challenge you to look for the thing that you can take on in your community. In fact, Thursday, we'll talk a little bit about that, getting the Ten Commandments and a lot of these things out there and what you can do to make that happen. Out of time for today, though. Thanks for staying with me today. I'm Rick Green. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wobbin and Rick Green. And now I want to just take a minute to have a little bit of a heart-to-heart with you. If you're where you can, right now in this moment, put your hand over your heart. Just place your hand on your heart. Yeah, kind of like you say in the Pledge of Allegiance, or maybe you're just feeling something strongly. Can you feel that? That heartbeat reminds us of life, reminds us that we're alive. It's the same for an unborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception. It's only 3 weeks in, folks. 3 weeks and that heartbeat is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on an ultrasound. That's where Preborn steps in, rescuing 200 babies every day from abortion simply by providing a mother with a free ultrasound and allowing her to hear her child's heartbeat. Imagine that. They get to hear the heartbeat, and they get to see that perfectly formed body in the womb. By 6 weeks, the eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, the baby's able to suck their thumb. Preborn needs our help to save these precious souls. For just $28, you could be the difference between the life or death of a baby. All your gifts are tax deductible. To donate, you just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and then baby, or donate securely right now at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.